Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Did you know that you could support the Organic Gardener Podcast without doing anything differently? If you're going to buy something on Amazon.com, since I'm an Amazon affiliate, if you go to Amazon through a link on my page, which every book that is listed on my website is linked to Amazon.com, you don't have to buy that book, but anything you buy that day from Amazon will give me a very, very small commission. But I got to tell you, it would sure help pay for, you know, just some of the basics it costs to keep the podcast up there. So if you like what you hear and you did want to give me just a little bit of support, that would be a great way for you to do it. If you're already going to Amazon to purchase something, like I said, all the books are linked up to because I am an Amazon affiliate. And so just if you didn't know anything, you don't have to buy that specific book, but just if you go to Amazon through my website, they do still give me a commission. So thanks for your support. Welcome to episode 160 of the Organic Gardener Podcast. Today, I'm super excited because I have somebody here that's going to talk about this new kind of a certification process I think people are going to be interested in. And he's just got lots of cool things going in his. He's one of those forward-thinking entrepreneurial visionaries. And he started out as an Air Force veteran who worked in radio frequency communications, spent the last 14 years working in information technology, or IT, as some people would refer to it, in some form or fashion, including a brief venture in the world of, is it SCADA, S-C-A-D-A, automation?
Yeah, that's right.
He holds 4 college degrees, including an undergraduate in computer science and an MBA. He founded his own web development and IT consulting firm in 2013 and started working for himself full-time just this last year. And one of his projects is this thing called AgriTrue, which we're going to talk about today. It's a community-policed Beyond Organic Food Certification and Labeling Program. And it's designed to provide a lower barrier to entry that's like an alternative to the USDA Organic Certification Program. So AgriTrue is also an online directory where local consumers and producers can connect and grow the local food economy. And my listeners know I'm really big on buying local, shopping local, growing local. So welcome to the show, to the Organic Gardener Podcast today, Blake Ackers from Alabama.
Hey, Jackie. Great to be here.
Well, I'm super excited. I'm so glad you reached out to me. And just like, we're excited to learn about your new venture. But I do always kind of like to start the show, you know, asking, tell us a little bit. I know that was a good introduction, but tell us a little more about yourself, maybe a little bit about your personal life. And then I'm going to ask about your first gardening experience. Like, you know, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Who were you with? What'd you grow? Like, where'd you get the gardening bug?
Sure. Well, for the past couple of years, I've been working on the side trying to grow this software business to the point where I could take it full time. And way back, you know, before that, I guess it was probably shortly after the whole 2007-2008 thing. There's a lot of fear around that whole incident, and I kind of got into gardening as a result of that indirectly, and it kind of stuck. Yeah, it's just fun to be outside, and it's kind of a way to unwind after work or, you know, before work, that sort of thing. So I've been gardening about 5 or 6 years on a very small scale. We've been trying to do a lot of the permaculture-based stuff, the regen ag stuff, but nothing really, I guess you would say, full time. You know, we really don't have a desire to do that so much as just do what we can around the house to provide our own clean food and kind of take care of the land that we have here.
So how big is your property there? Like, is it just a regular house with a backyard, or do you have some acreage, or how big of a place are you on?
Yeah, we're in a traditional 3-bed, 2-bath. We're on about 1.25 acres. Oh, wow. And it's on the top of a hill. It's actually one of the tallest points in our county. So because of that, we have some really big problems with like drainage and clay soils that we kind of have to deal with here.
And then, so did you garden when you were a kid with your family? Did you grow up in Alabama, or are you there because of the Army or the Air
Well,
Force?
So I grew up here. Yeah, it was Air Force. I grew up here. Funny story, if you're in the military and you say you don't want to go somewhere, that's where you go.
Right.
So I picked all of these locations in the Southeast. They call it a dream sheet because it's really just a dream, you know. You're probably not going to get what you pick. So I pick all this stuff in the Southeast around home, and they sent me to Germany. So we stayed over there for a few years, got to see Europe, which was really neat. And at the end of our time over there, we decided to come back home because, you know, we've got family here and roots and all that, and wanted to be able to take care of parents and grandparents, stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then, well, what was your very first gardening experience like? Like after you grew up, or did you garden with your grandparents, or?
A little bit as a kid, but not much. Not enough for it to really stick. Mm-hmm. And you know how it kind of is when you're a kid. You've got other interests and mm-hmm. pulled in a million different directions. So, you know, we had a couple of little gardens when I was young, and we never really did much with them. But, you know, having your own property and, you know, having that resource available, a lot of people just don't do anything with it. And to me, you know, a lawn is really wasted space. Mm-hmm. So that kind of was part of the motivation for me when I got into the whole preparedness thing shortly after the financial crash, you know. Mm-hmm. I got into that a little bit, and, you know, some people take it way too far. I try not to, but to me, you know, if you've got seeds in a freezer somewhere, you know, you buy an emergency supply of seeds, well, what good is that if you don't know how to garden?
Good point.
So my whole point and purpose in this is to kind of maintain that skill and also have something fun to do. You know, drink a beer and go outside and get in nature. We don't spend enough time outdoors, I don't think. And, you know, that's kind of a way to get back into that, even if it's just for 10 or 15 minutes a day.
Cool. I like that. So then how did you learn how to garden organically? Like, just like when you started doing your own, that's kind of what you stumbled on? Or like, how'd you come up with that?
Well, a lot of different resources. I think probably the most beneficial to me was reading, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but Toby Hemingway's book, Gaia's Garden. Have you heard of that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just a great resource for somebody that's only got, you know, 1 to 2 acres, and they're looking to learn, you know, how can we make this more productive by integrating different systems together so that you do less work and you work with the system. So that's been really helpful. And Backwoods Home Magazine, I've subscribed to that for a few years, and they've got some really great articles, you know, some practical do-it-yourself kind of stuff that I found really beneficial over the years.
Nice. Okay. So do you want to tell us about something? Well, you were telling me in the pre-chat kind of you didn't do much of a garden this year, or did anything grow well? You said you started a garden and then kind of it faded out because you were gone too much. Do you want to? I'll just let you talk.
Yeah, sure. Well, what happened is we were out of town most of the summer, and, you know, we'd come back, you know, maybe 1 weekend, 2 weekends a month.
Oh.
The only thing that really did well was peppers. For some reason in the South, jalapenos are, I don't know, they'll survive the apocalypse if it ever happens. It's kind of crazy. You know, they did fine without us even really being here. We set up a lot of irrigation systems and mulch and stuff like that in the raised garden, and that kind of helped. At the end of the day, though, when it got to the heat of like June, July, August, things just kind of got sad and died. So, in the past, we've done really good with cucumbers for some reason. Literally, you know, 5 or 6 plants, and I'm bringing in like 400 pounds of those things, you know, in the late part of June.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's really weird because you wouldn't think that. We've got that heavy clay soil up here, but there's a mineral in there, something they just love. And it gets hot enough, I guess it's just the right temperature for them, and things just go wild at the end of June.
Nice. The problem we have when things came up that early was like that we couldn't get any dill. Our dill wasn't ready. Do you have that problem? Do you make dill pickles with those cucumbers, or do you just eat them?
We try to eat a lot of them fresh, but obviously when you're, you know, when you're grabbing, I don't know, 20 pounds of them one afternoon, you can't always do that. So, no, I've never even tried to grow dill here. So I always just go to buy like bulk spices, buy like a pound of it. And, you know, we'll make pickles that way. We tried fermenting pickles and it was kind of, I don't know, it was interesting. I think I've got to work on the timing on that, because if you leave them in there too long, they get soggy.
Oh, we haven't ever tried that. Mike just has some pickle thing that he does. Boy, are they good in the middle of winter, but that's a lot of cucumbers. All right, well, so is there something different or new you're excited to try next year, like that you haven't done before?
Yeah, so while we were out of town, the plan was we're actually going to move out of this house. That fell through. So things went on hold. We got rid of, we keep maybe 5 or 6 chickens around, usually just enough to provide us with some eggs and maybe share with friends and family. So we got rid of the chickens, and next year, something I want to try. Have you seen these chicken tunnels people are doing, like around the garden? Okay. Well, just to give you a visual on it, the concept is, you know, you've got your rows in your garden, and in my case, I've got raised beds, you know, with wood framing. And so you got that area you have to weed. Well, a lot of people are making these tunnels out of chicken wire. It's just tall enough basically for one chicken to get through. And they set that up to where the chickens have access during the day to the space between the rows. So they can't really get in there and damage your plants, but they can help with insect control, weed control, and they can help out also with fertility. So, and that's really getting back to that permaculture principle of working with nature and getting, you know, animals to help you instead of, you know, kind of doing all the labor yourself. So
nice.
I want to try
that. I like
that. Year.
Everybody told me that, like, because last year's really the first year our chickens could get into our garden. This summer was like the first year, and I was so scared they were going to eat Mike's stuff, like especially like when the green beans were just about to harvest, and I was like, oh my gosh, I know it, they're going to go in there now. But they didn't eat anything really. I have no idea why. They had total access to the garden. They could go in the garden, out of the garden, maybe just because when the garden was blooming there was so much stuff. But I've heard that they can totally wreak havoc. And also, like, Mike grew, he has like this little mini farm he started a couple years ago, and they do not have access to the mini farm. So maybe they're just, but that sounds good. I like the idea of the chickens doing the work and then them just being able to be in the garden and eat those weeds and fresh bugs, because I think it's healthier for their diet. Like, if you just feed your chickens, for a long time, our chickens were just in a pen, and so pretty much they only ate what we fed them, like scratch and what's that other stuff that you feed the chickens? The lay mash. And so I like the idea that they can get out and get fresher food and more bugs. And they get quite a few bugs. And they, like, we would save them chicken scraps, but I think it's better the more they get out. So that sounds cool. Chicken tunnels out of chicken wire. That sounds easy enough to build too. But then are they like portable? Do they come out? I mean, you must need to be able to walk through those rows, right?
So if I design it, I think the concept is to make it lightweight enough and temporary enough to where I can put it between all the raised beds and two people can pick it up and move it. So we can leave them in there to where they just have access to the area around the garden for about 3 to 4 days. And then it'd be time to move on because they've kind of taken the weeds down. They've controlled the bugs. And then we can let them out into a bigger area and bring them back in when we need them there.
I love it. So, do you want to tell us about something that didn't work the way you thought it was going to this season, or maybe something that didn't come out the way you thought it would? And that might be like because you were gone.
Well, yeah, there's that. During the summer, everything went wrong. Nothing worked. And so we're in the middle of the worst drought. I think it's historic. I don't know when the last time it was this bad in this part of the country, but we've got forest fires everywhere. We haven't had literally, I think we got maybe like an eighth of an inch of rain at my house in the past 90 days. So everything, even my perennial stuff, is trying to dry out, and it's not hanging in so well, because normally we get a dry spell that lasts through September, and by this time of the year it's usually just rainy, and you know, we don't see this that often. So that's been a challenge, getting all the perennial stuff to kind of survive into dormancy and get ready for the next year without drying out too bad.
Yeah, because they say that can be like the biggest issue is a lack of water. Like I've heard this woman, Leslie Fowler, came on, who lives around here where we are, our neck of the woods. And she said that a lot of people think fruit trees don't make it here because it's too cold. But what happens to them is they don't get that water in the fall and they die of like dehydration, like thirst. Like they have to, you have to, she said the best thing to do is like start soaking them like for two solid weeks, just soak them every night as much water as you can before that frost comes. So I could see that your perennials, like making sure that they're getting enough water to make it through the winter would be a challenge. So what are you doing for water? Like, do you have water, you know, like the regulations where you're not allowed to water and stuff like that going?
Actually, we are allowed to hand water once every other week, I believe.
Oh my goodness.
Is the rule. Yeah. Well, it's extreme because, you know, we've got lakes drying up. We've got just all kinds of problems. And they're saying it's probably going to be the first of the year before we have a significant rain event.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's, like I said, it's historic. And one of the things that's really helped me more so than anything is getting the soil ready to plant beforehand and getting that biology going, doing things like mulch that kind of holds in the evaporation, prevents that from being such an issue, and just really building that web under the soil, you know, of life. And what that does is it kind of helps hold in the moisture and keep what's left there from kind of going away. So the places that I've really worked on improving the soil, the trees are doing a lot better than the places that have kind of got neglected over the past few years. So it's really important to mulch where you can, and it's also important to do everything you can to feed the soil to bring it to life, because that's what really increases drought resistance for a lot of plants.
Awesome. You are just dropping tons of golden seeds. It's so true. Like, that has definitely been an underlying theme of my podcast. Like, the number one thing everybody talks about is it's all about the soil and what you can do to your soil. And those are great tips, because you guys, I'm sorry to hear, are going through a drought right now, but other places have gone through it in the past and they're going to be going through it again. And so just, you know, I love the preventative part of what you're saying about, you know, keep that soil as healthy as you can and fertile and, you know, bring it to life. And mulching's always important. Before we get to the root of things, we're going to take a moment to thank our sponsors, my good friend, Dacia Daly from Simply Josephine.
It's all about handcrafted soaps and apron love here at Simply Josephine. Located in Montana's beautiful Tobacco Valley, I create everything from my home studio. Currently, I offer 6 different kinds of handmade soaps, 3 different salves, using wildcrafted plant medicine from right here in our beautiful valley. In addition to my body care products, I also make several styles of aprons. Everything is available at simplyjosephine.com. We want to share a little love with the Organic Gardener Podcast listeners. We're offering 15% off. Use code OGP15 at checkout. Thanks and have a beautiful day. SimplyJosephine.com.
This is Robin Kelson from the Good Seed Company. We sell heirloom seeds for common use. We offer vegetable, herb, flower seeds locally adapted for our area, and all open pollinated and heirloom, a lot of them organic or ecologically farmed. We also sell seed collections to help you, to help new gardeners be successful in their growing. We sell flower collections that are good for pollinators. We sell medicinal herbs and culinary herbs, all sorts of seeds that would be of interest to new and experienced gardeners. www.goodseedco.net. We're having a sale right now on garlic and greens for fall, if you're interested.
Let's get to the root of things. So do you have like a least favorite activity? Like, is there something in the garden that you have to struggle to get yourself to go out there and do?
In the past I did, but I stopped doing that stuff.
Nice. That's great advice for people to hear that, like, because if people are like gardening, oh, I hate gardening, that sounds awful, too much work. Like, you're going to give them some solutions for what they could do to make it easier.
Yeah, exactly. So when we started out, I told you we had that hard pack clay soil. Mm-hmm. We started out with a rototiller trying to break it up, and that's just back-breaking work. So I'm probably one of the more lazy gardeners you'll ever meet. And so, you know, anything like that, anything like tilling or anything is just really, you know, you've got to get out there and.
Yeah, it is a lot of work. Like, you think, oh, a rototiller's going to do the work for me. I've watched Mike push that. I'm like, forget it. I'm not even going to try it. That looks way too hard for me right off the bat. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to do it every year over and over and over again. And I just said, you know, forget this. I can go down the road. We've got a nursery place. I can get an entire truckload of wood mulch, you know, for $14.
No way.
And so we started doing the whole, I'm sure you've heard of the back to Eden gardening method, to where you do deep mulch. That worked for a few years in that spot.
You were telling us about a $14 load of wood mulch and that you have put it on one spot, but then that's where I lost you.
Yeah, and it worked great for a while for us. And I think what happened is over time, it kind of compacted back down in spite of that, because we didn't have the soil biology where it needed to be to kind of, you know, have the worms and everything kind of doing the tilling for us. And I think part of that is just the erosion runoff we have being on such a steep inclination up on the top of this hill. So it worked for a while, and then I finally gave up on, because again, I'm trying to do everything as simple as possible, minimize effort. I gave up on just gardening, you know, in a regular place, and moved everything annual to raised beds, to where we could control the soil, we could bring in good high quality dirt, and we converted that whole area that used to be an annual garden over to a blackberry patch. And it's doing really well, because they eat that stuff up. They love really heavy clay soil. So they're really taking off right now. And it's all about, you know, again, getting back to interacting with the landscape and figuring out through time and observation what works in a particular area. And for us, blackberries work great in that spot. They like the clay. Tomatoes, not so much.
Oh. I could see that. So then on the flip side, what is your favorite activity to do in the garden?
I would have to say that either planting or harvesting, they're both fun, because you get that excitement of, you know, I really don't know what this thing's going to do when I plant a seed. I don't know if it's going to just be the most awesome plant ever, or if it's just going to kind of, you know, do its thing and kind of mill along for a while. And then with harvest, you get that, you know, that sudden rush in June to where everything's just producing like wild. And that's just really fun to do. And also, I would have to say in the winter, planning for the next season, you know, whether it's nursery starts or just planning out what you want to do the next year. So those are probably my three favorite things.
Excellent. Yeah. I like planning too. And Megan Kane, who's like the expert planner, has been a very popular episode on my show. And she talks a lot about being strategic and planning. And the most fun is in the winter when you're putting your designs together and ordering your seeds and things. So, Blake, what's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
Well, Jackie, kind of getting back to that thing where we've got heavy clay soil up here. Building biology in the soil is probably the most important thing at this site. So I don't know if you've ever heard Nick Ferguson's podcast, Homegrown Liberty, but he did a post.
I think I have.
Yeah, it's a great podcast. He did a post a few days ago about 4 steps to building healthy soil. Mm-hmm. And his methods, because he does that, you know, raised bed thing, his methods just work really great for us because he's got a whole process of stacking organic matter in there. And he goes into detail about, you know, you want to use straw, not hay, you know, that kind of thing, and certain things you can amend the soil with, certain things that aren't such a good idea, and dealing with things like, you know, chicken manure's hot, rabbit manure's okay, you know, that kind of thing. And really pointing out the nuts and bolts of how to build your soil up over time so you've got a good site to grow in.
Nice. Okay, we'll have to put the link to that in the show notes. So, Blake, what's your favorite tool? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without? What were you going to plan take on your move?
Not so much a tool, so to speak, but I use it as a tool, and this might sound a little bit off at first, but stacks and stacks of cardboard. Well, we gave up on tilling, so one of the best things I found for starting a site off with no-till, if you've got regular grass, you know, whether it's, you know, manicured lawn or if it's just like weeds growing up, whatever, pick that spot out and put about 3 layers of cardboard directly on the grass in the fall. Water it down really good with a garden hose and put about 3 to 4 inches of mulch on top of it. I don't know what it is about the cardboard, but it just attracts earthworms. I guess they think it's really, you know, good to eat. I don't know, but the spots we did that 2 years ago to plant our perennial garden in, they're surviving the drought a lot better than anything else. And it just seems like, yeah, that whole cardboard method just seems to really kickstart things, because you've got the nitrogen from the green from the grass dying. Mm-hmm. You've got the carbon right there from the cardboard. If you keep it wet for, I don't know, a week or two after you set it out like that, it just really mixes together and kind of kickstarts everything. So that method's worked really good here for us.
Awesome. I'm so glad you said that, because you know what? I had somebody call, this woman asked me a question about, she wanted to put the cardboard down by her lavender, and she was worried because she said the lavender needed really well-drained soil, but that might be a good tip for her, that you do it in the fall, cover it with the mulch, and then it will help in the future. And that's going to bring in those worms, which is like something people do ask me a lot. And like, it's so funny, my little kids, we started a gardening club, and one of them the other day said something about, we were talking about building compost, and one of the kids goes, you know, if you have compost, you're going to get worms. I thought that was so cute. I was like, yeah. So it's pretty fun. So do you have a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
Well, not so much a recipe. We like to do a lot of fermentation, whether that's beer, wine, you know, alcohol, or whether it's lacto-fermentation with vegetables. And that gets back to that whole, you know, we've got 200 pounds of cucumbers, you know, we've got buckets of tomatoes, what do we do with them kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So with lacto-fermentation, when you kickstart that process, you get that good beneficial bacteria breaking down the food and kind of preserving it. Mm-hmm. And you take fresh tomatoes, and if you turn them into a lacto-fermented salsa, that's good in the fridge for at least, I don't know, 20, 30 days. So we like doing it for the health benefits. You know, everybody's worried about probiotics and, you know, good gut health. So we do it for the health benefits. We also do it for the practicality of making that food last and not having to, you know, things go to waste.
Nice. Because that used to be one of my big questions. What do you do to keep? Because I hate when all the harvest comes in at the same time and you get 6 tons of food all at once that you were all excited about. But to me, that's like the most like frustrating thing, because I'm usually working a full-time job and then trying to deal with it all. And I'll take some to work and I'll take some here and I'll be like, here, take some food. Like even right now, I have 4 cabbages in the back of my car. And like one person I post on Facebook and she's like, I'll take them. But then have I made it to her house? And it's like, I don't know. You know, it's just cool. So I like that, using that. And you're right. People fermentated foods are very big right now. And I really like the way you talk about the no-till method. Like, the first time I ever heard of the no-till, no-dig method was John Moore was on my show, and I was like, what is this guy talking about? And it was so funny. And then now I've learned so much more since then. So
yeah, and I should
like that,
that
you have
back.
An easy way using the cardboard. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I should go back and clarify that, because when you set that out in the fall, the intent is to plant in the spring. So you want 6 months for that stuff to really break down. Because you mentioned somebody had talked about lavender and well-drained soil. So yeah, that's right. You don't want to plant right in that, because if you do, what's going to happen, you've added all that carbon to the top of the soil. It's going to suck up all the nitrogen that's on that first half inch of soil. And you're going to have some problems getting stuff to really start there. So the idea with that is to get the spot ready 6 months in advance, and then you don't have to till it in the spring to plant there.
Nice. I think that's going to, people are really going to like that though, because they're going to be like, oh, well, look at this easy way I can get this going. So, and cardboard, you know, if you don't know where to get cardboard, go to any, like practically any store. Like, we went through a ton of cardboard at the golf course I worked at last summer, when I worked at, you know, other places that I've worked at that you wouldn't think, like the cardboard and the plastic that they throw out the back door. Like, everybody gets stuff delivered in cardboard. There's cardboard all over, and you can get clean cardboard boxes. Trust me, like almost any business will probably be like, yes, take this away. We don't have to haul it to the garbage. Just ask them, like, what day is the best day? What day do they get their shipping? So if people are wondering where to get cardboard, because I've had that question too, usually. And like, furniture stores will have a lot of cardboard. Your big box stores, like, there's just tons of cardboard that drives me crazy that is not getting recycled. So anyway, how about a favorite internet resource? Is this where you're going to tell us about AgriTrue and how that works? Because that's an internet resource, right?
Well, it is, and it's not really a resource for education, so I was going to kind of save that for later. But,
oh, okay.
So permaethos.com, I don't know if you've heard of that or not, but it's real big in the permaculture design aspect of gardening, and they've just got a phenomenal amount of resources out there as far as education goes. So that's really a great site to check out.
Nice.
And they're bringing a lot more awareness of permaculture to the U.S. because I guess it kind of started really in Japan and Australia and kind of over in that part of the world. Oh. So you're not seeing it on a large scale here yet, but I think projects like PermaEthos will kind of, I don't know, awaken people to what's really possible and the abundance you can get when you design systems correctly here in the U.S. So really excited to see how that turns out.
Nice. I think this is the perfect time to have this interview. So people probably don't know, we're talking on Thanksgiving, and here in the United States, it's right after the big election. And I know a lot of people are worried about, you know, what's going to happen. So I think that this is, you know, a positive, very, you know, forward thinking interview we've got going here. And you're talking about, like, you know, especially the way you started out talking about, you kind of got interested in 2007, 2008, when our futures got a little less stable and a little scarier out there. And so people are going to like hearing, you know, like a positive look into the future. So how about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine? You mentioned some in the beginning.
Well, yeah, not so much reading material. I guess we could go back to Toby Hemingway's book. If you really want a, I guess, something you got to sit down and absorb, you could read Permaculture One by Bill Mollison. But that's one of those books where if you read a page, it's got about 10 pages of information in it. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a reference guide, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I'm really a
but
big fan of
reference.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. And I'm really a big fan also of Jeff Lawton's work. So if you go to jefflawtononline.com, he's got all these great videos that kind of show you what's possible. You know, he did that big Green in the Desert project, and I think it was around Jordan, somewhere in Jordan. And, you know, the local ag department, they told him, you know, what you're doing is not possible. It's going to fail. And he kind of proved them wrong. So it's neat to see what's possible when you change your thinking. So those are some resources I really like.
Cool. Okay. I'll put those links. I've seen those, the video of his, The Greening of the Desert too. He's been recommended by a couple of people now. So excellent. Well, good. All good resources there. So, okay. Is this where you're going to tell us about the AgriTrue business?
Yeah, sure. I guess we should get into that now. At this point, we've gone through a lot of information about me and what we're doing here as far as the gardening goes. But part of that is taking that hobby and applying it to what I do every day and saying, you know, what can I do to kind of help people along, I guess, in that, you know, that whole backyard, small-scale farming thing. And I worked with Jack Spierko of Survival Podcast on a few projects. One of his projects he'd been trying to get off the ground for a long time was AgriTrue. And it just didn't work out. It kind of petered out. So this is really AgriTrue 2.0. We got this business directory software that we'd customized. We did a lot of customization work on the back end of it to make it do what we wanted to for Jack's site. Oh. And so we brought that into AgriTrue and said, you know what, we can allow farmers to list their farm on here for basically $1 a month. It's $5 for a 6-month subscription. So you get that exposure and people can look on a map and say, hey, there's 5, 10, 15 farms near me that are all doing things right that I could shop with, that I could do business with, meet them at the farmer's market, whatever. So part of it is that online resource, being able to connect consumers to producers
so
that are doing
things
the right way.
Especially like when people are starting out, to be able to list your farm for $1 a month, you know, is affordable. And it's like a good way for new, because that's where me and my husband are. Like, we haven't actually really sold anything. Like, I think he made $15 selling cucumbers 1 year, and he sold a few little things. But like, as far as like going to the farmer's market or doing, well, like he started like the honey this year, and just like, we don't have enough to like do, but for like $1 to be able to post our site would be nice to have like people, and then still have to figure out how I'm going to hook up with them. But
yeah,
anyway. Okay. Go ahead.
When you're, you know, like you said, when you're starting out, you don't have a big marketing budget. And so that's part of it, is getting that online directory. The other part is the food certification. So we weren't happy with USDA organic because, you know, a lot of reasons. One of them being, it's kind of been, I don't know, co-opted by the larger farms.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the regulations make sense for a big operation and don't for a small operation. Cool. I don't know if that's intentional or not, but, you know, at the end of the day, if you've got a farm with 200 head of dairy cattle and one of those cows gets sick and has to go on antibiotics, you can't use it as a dairy cow anymore. You have to sell it off. So you've got a loss there. If you've got 5 dairy cows and one of them gets sick, suddenly that's 20% of your profit gone. So the regulations that say you can't take that animal, quarantine it, you know, don't use it for milk production for 2 or 3 months and bring it back into production, don't really work for the small farm. And at the end of the day, you know, there's responsible and irresponsible use of antibiotic, in my opinion.
Right.
To me, that's responsible, to save an animal's life. It's not responsible to have a chicken house of horrors, you know, where they just eat antibiotics all day.
Right.
So to me, the way USDA organic is set up, it kind of penalizes small farmers. And we wanted a standard that was more flexible. So with AgriTrue, like you said earlier, it's community policed. And you sign up, you agree to the standard. We're never going to have like an AgriTrue police that's going to come out to your farm and, you know, make sure you're doing things right. You know, we're not going to do that whole thing. But what we do have is a rating system set up on the site. So let's say you visit somebody's farm and you don't think they're doing things exactly the right way. It's not meeting the standard. You know, see a big bottle Roundup in the corner or something like that. You can rate that farm. You can make the community aware of the situation and kind of have that policing action going on without having to have this standard, you know, that farmers have to spend all this money and all this effort to qualify for. And, you know, it's impossible if you're starting out, and it's impossible if you're, you know, less than a certain number of acres. So want to make it available to the small farmers, the people just starting out, and the people that could benefit from that certification labeling. So when you sign up on agritrue.com, you instantly get access to product labels. So let's say you're selling, like you said, honey. You could take that logo off our site, put it on your honey, and now you've got an AgriTrue certified product. So it's instantly available. You just have to agree to abide by our standards of clean food and healthy practices and soil management.
I like that idea. I like it a lot. And it's much more like, I don't know, for me, like, the first place I go if I want to know something is I go to Amazon. Like, even if I'm standing in the store and I want to buy something, or, like, when I've worked places and people have asked me questions about things I didn't know, go to Amazon and, like, you know, nothing's going to have a perfect review. There's always going to be some negative reviews. As a matter of fact, if you don't see some negative reviews, you got to wonder about who is making those reviews. But, you know, you can get a general sense, you know, if it has 500 good reviews. Now, this is Amazon, you know, I'm talking about, you know, AgriTrue is probably not going to have that many reviews on its site. But, you know, having people say, you know, give testimonials, and, you know, people who are happy with your product are going to be happy to go there and give you a testimonial. And I think that's a really good way to, you know, this is 2016, 2017, social media rocks our world. And that's kind of like, you know, basically a form of social media, like people, you know, policing it that way. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And with AgriTrue, I think every rating actually carries more weight than with Amazon, because it's got that community aspect. It's not just a big retail site where you might have people literally buying ratings. You might have that kind of thing.
Right.
You know, it's just, it's really more of a small niche community. So, and it's local too. So if there's five or six people going to this farm and one or two of those people rate the farm, you know, that's kind of a big thing to me, because it's one of your neighbors. You know, somebody you hopefully can trust. So
that is an excellent point.
Yeah, that's one of the things I like about AgriTrue. And I've also been working on a project. It's kind of a side project I've worked on for myself. It's called fertilizerforless.com.
Cool. Tell us about that. Yeah.
So we're selling a fertilizer product that you can basically treat an entire acre for less than $30. And the goal is to kind of get people out of that mentality of using chemical fertilizers and convert over to our product, which is natural based. It's fish emulsion, kelp, bone meal, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to really push that hard for a lot of these farmers that are kind of on the fence about, you know, do we convert to organic? Do we not convert? You know, and kind of giving them that tool to make the decision based off of finance, because for a lot of big farms, what it all gets down to is the bottom line. And, you know, there's so much uncertainty around what's going to happen in the next season. Well, if we can give you a product that is a fraction of the cost of chemical fertilizers, helps you start on that process to converting over to organic, I think it's a really big win for those, for the big farms as well as the small farms that could benefit from the product too. So it's fertilizerforless.com. It's natural-based fertilizers. We've also got an OMRI-certified line of fertilizer. It's pretty much the same product, though.
For listeners, certified. If they're wondering what's OMRI, that's like some kind of organic rate certification. What's OMRI stand
for? Yeah, that's
again?
Right. Organic Mineral Institute, I believe, a research institute, yeah. Uh-huh. So it's basically certified organic fertilizer.
Right. Cool. That's awesome, because like one of my guests I talked to was this woman, Liz Carlisle, and she wrote this book called The Lentil Underground. And so she's this student. She went to Stanford to go back and get her MBA or PhD or something. And she wrote this book documenting, like, she went and talked to these farmers in Montana that are using organic, you know, principles and rotations and different crops and growing pulses to grow green, you know, fertilizer manure for their foods and for their soil. And she's, you know, and then she went to like Iowa and, you know, the Midwest and said, well, if we know these are the best practices? Why aren't we using them here? And one of the, you know, the, what you're talking about is exactly the thing she ran into. People were scared about their crops. Were they going to grow? Were they going to be able to, you know, meet the bank? Was the bank going to, you know, support them? And so I think you are meeting a huge need. That Fertilizer for Less sounds like a great opportunity for people that, you know, are thinking it, and they know, you know, a lot of farmers are kind of stuck because the chemical companies, you know, give them the seed and give them the loans and, you know, say, oh, you need more chemicals, you need more of this and more of that. And you're kind of breaking that cycle and giving them an inexpensive, effective option. So I like that.
Yeah. And that cycle you're speaking of, it gets worse and worse. So yeah. What happens is you spray chemical fertilizer and it kills a lot of the soil microbes. It kind of makes it more prone to erosion because of that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of your nutrient washes off. So next year you've got to keep spraying more and more of it. I think around maybe 10% of the minerals in chemical fertilizer are actually bioavailable. The amount of nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium that the plants can actually use is maybe 10% of what you're spraying or spreading out in an area. And did I lose you?
No, I'm just listening and typing.
Oh, sorry. So
no worries.
With our product, it's a foliar spray. So you dilute it in water, you spray it on the leaves absorb it. You know, they take all that nutrient down to the roots. If you're not, you know, pulling up the roots at the end of the season, that decomposes. It's available next year for the next season's crop. And it's just a better way to manage land because you're actually feeding the soil. And getting back to the drought we had here over the past few months, when you have that soil biology going on and you're not killing it off with chemical fertilizers, you're less drought. You're more drought resistant. You have less problems right. with drought. So, you know, a lot of people have that fear of converting over. You know, you really need to look at it from the perspective of, am I building the soil or am I mining the soil? And if you're mining the soil, eventually it's going to run out. And that's, to me, one of the big reasons to make that leap and convert over to organic fertilizer.
Nice. Oh, I'm so glad we're doing this day. I think this is the perfect day to be thankful for your planet because we're thankful for you because you're just like going out there and trying hard and doing things to make solutions that we all need and are just so important. And you're very knowledgeable about everything. And just I think listeners are really going to like this episode because it's going to teach them a lot and give them solutions to offer to other people. Because, you know, all of us, we kind of like, you know, my audience, we all kind of feel sometimes like we're alone out there. Like even people, like I get people ask me all the time. They're like, what's wrong with like chemicals? What's wrong with fertilizer? What's wrong with Miracle-Gro soil? What's wrong with this? What's wrong with that? And I'm just like, oh, well, you know, we really want to go for healthy soil and like natural compost is the best things. And, you know, there's just so many people out there. So I think a lot of us feel alone. And so I think you're adding a lot of solutions that people and then, you know, the big farmers will like too.
Yeah. And the thing is with Miracle-Gro and things like that is it works. Okay. But it doesn't work in the long term. And, you know, as humans, we have a problem with long-term thinking. So, you know, Miracle-Gro is great. You spray it on plants and things just take off.
That it works as it's available. Like to find good, right. healthy soil is a hard thing to do. It's a really hard thing to do to find healthy soil, to find enough compost to grow. You know, when people just they go to the store, I want some soil. This is what's there. And that's what they get.
Yeah. So it's that instant gratification of you spray it on the plant and 2 days later, the plant's thriving again. But what you've done is part of what you've done is killed off the soil bacteria and some other bacteria starts eating what's dead. And then that just kind of kicks up the bioavailable nutrients for a minute. But then it, in the long run, actually degrades the soil. Mm-hmm. So it works great the first time, but then you keep having to spray more and more and more of it over time. And that's what we're trying to get away from with Fertilizer for Less is, we're trying to put something on your plants that will actually feed the soil so that in subsequent seasons, you actually need less of our product instead of more. So that's kind of what we're trying to do, is to get away from that mentality of just, you know, using the chemicals and getting that instant gratification.
Nice. Okay. Well, anything else you want to tell us about any of your, either the AgriTrue or the Fertilizer for Less?
No, I'd really encourage everybody that's thinking about, you know, either starting a farm, trying to make a part-time income out of it or full-time income, and you're trying to do everything right and follow organic practices, seriously consider going to agritrue.com, signing up for listing, even if it's just a basic listing, get that exposure and help us grow this community and help us increase consumer awareness of the certification. Because, you know, if we can make it to where everybody that wants to start a farm can be certified in year one versus having to go through that long and drawn out USDA process, I think it's just going to help us get more small farms in the U.S. and get away from that big centralized industrial model. So it's agritrue.com. If you want to sign up, it's really easy. Just go there. And we've got some instructions on the about section. You can get signed up probably in 10 minutes or less.
Tell people about like the non-basic, like the, what was it? Were they like silver packages and different?
Sure. Yeah, we've got bronze, silver, and gold package.
Yeah.
And what that is it's 1 year, 2 year, and 3 year. You get a slight discount when you sign up for the gold package and the silver package over the bronze, because you're signing up for a longer period of time. When you sign up for any of those premium packages, you get a longer description of your farm, so you can write about your farm more. You get pictures. You can upload images to the site. You can link to your website. And if you sign up for one of those premium packages, you'll get what's called a follow link. And I'm kind of getting into the world of search engine marketing a bit. But what that link does is it tells the search engine that this is something I want you to look at. So it will actually increase your website's prestige, mm-hmm. I guess you would say, within the search engine. Mm-hmm. So you're getting that follow link to you. You're getting images. You're getting all these other features, Facebook like shares, all that stuff. So the premium package, if you can afford it, if it's in your marketing budget, you get a lot of value for that. And it's helping us out to grow the brand and kind of spread awareness of local organic food.
Nice. I love the whole thought of it, and I just think it's a great idea. And I also think, like, if listeners aren't do they have to pay, like, if they want to go there and like search for a farm, if they want to find a place in their local area, do they have to pay, or they just get to use it for free?
Yeah, it's free to shop, and that's why we want to get as many farms signed up as possible. Right now we've mm-hmm. got, we launched last week, and we've got about a half dozen farms listed.
Oh, wow, you are new.
Grow it. Yeah, we're brand new, but we're really trying to grow this into a national brand and a national certification. My goal is to have AgriTrue on the labels of at least two or three products in every farmer's market in the country. So we want to grow it, and we want to make it something that's viable for people to be able to connect with their local farmer.
Nice. I love it. I think it's just a great idea. And I talked to this woman, Jackie, I think her last name is Fulcomer, and she had a job for a long time. She was like the person that went and certified farms. And she talked about the process. And that episode's been downloaded a lot, so I know people are going to be interested in this. I talked to another guy in New Jersey who has kind of a similar thing, but he doesn't have the certification piece, I don't think. He just is like doing the connecting farms. But the more of these websites we have, the better it is. The more people are being able to search, you know, for local food is just, and connecting farmers, it's going to encourage people to become farmers, to grow food, to, you know, or maybe if they just want to have like some extra, like maybe one person just wants to have raspberries, you know, it'll give them an opportunity to just sell their raspberries and not have to worry worry about all the other intricate parts of, you know, trying to, you know, maybe they just happen to have a bunch of raspberry bushes or something, or I don't know, you know, or lavender or apples or, you know, lettuce one year, you know, just like the more, you know, having a low cost way to get in, and a, you know, like you said, there's all those barriers, reducing those barriers is just helpful for everyone. Cause I think, you know, my audience is just interested in being able to get healthy food. And I think a lot of people are like me, where we can't, we have a full-time job growing a lot of, like my husband does most of the growing in my house. And so a lot of listeners are going to be interested in finding places where they can support their local system. So you're meeting, you know, a lot of needs there. Anyway, ready for my final question?
Sure.
Okay, so it goes, if there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, and that can be your own project. I mean, it could, you can just talk about what you've said even. But what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale? It could just be like local food.
Well, I think a big thing for me is local food, but also converting large production over to permaculture. You see farms like Darby Simpson's farm. I think he's up in Wisconsin, to where all his neighbors are growing corn everywhere. And he's got these systems, these silvopasture models, where he moves pigs and chickens between rows of chestnuts, and the system just works all together. The animals feed the plants. So I think really moving the large scale systems over to that model that's a lot more, not just sustainable, but regenerative, to where you're actually building the soil and improving the land instead of just sustaining. That's a big thing for me. And like you said, just connecting local people, getting more local production, and decentralizing our food system to where, you know, it's not just an environmental thing at the end of the day. It's a security thing, because we rely on food that comes in on a truck. And if we don't have that production capability in our local communities, and there is a regional disaster or something, and let's say the trucks can't run into your area for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, natural disaster or whatever, you need that resiliency. And we need, you know, hard skills. We need to be able to do things as individuals. And I think, you know, a big problem today is a lot of people can't do stuff. They don't know how to garden. They don't know how to change a tire on a car, you know. Right. So I think that's, I think that's a big thing. Yeah, really.
I think that's so important. It's true. Well, Blake, you've been such an awesome guest today. I'm so glad you reached out to me, and I'm so glad we're talking on Thanksgiving. So do you just have, like, not that you haven't been full of golden seeds and total inspiration today, but do you have like a tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Yeah, and this gets back to my whole idea of using working with nature and working with animals in a system to where everything works together. Bill Mollison, one of the founders of permaculture, said that everything gardens. So if you can find a way to, if you raise animals, you can find a way to bring them into the garden, whether it's for pest control, weed control, whatever, try it out and see if it works. Because, you know, they interact with the plants just like we do, only it's in a different way. And if you can harness that energy, it makes your life a lot easier instead of having to go out and pick up weeds yourself.
Nice. My mom's going to say, what do I do about that squirrel that keeps eating my pumpkins? Sorry, totally different topic. But anyway, tell listeners how to connect with you one more time. Like, tell them the website addresses and everything.
All right, so for AgriTrue, you can just visit agritrue.com, or you can email me right now at sales@fertilizerforless.com.
Okay.
Those are the two sites I'm working on within this, you know, whole gardening organic movement. And if you want to reach out to me for web design, I've done websites for several farms now, Nine Mile Farm, Winnipeg Farms. You can email me at blake@blakedevelopment.net. and reach out to me that way.
Okay. I'll make sure I put those links in the show notes. Well, thank you so much, and you have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
You too, Jackie. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you. Did you know that you could support the Organic Gardener podcast without doing anything differently? If you're going to buy something on Amazon.com, since I'm an Amazon affiliate, if you go to Amazon through a link on my page, which every book that is listed on my website is linked to Amazon.com, you don't have to buy that book, but anything you buy that day from Amazon will give me a very, very small commission, but I got to tell you, it would sure help pay for, you know, just some of the basics it costs to keep the podcast up there. So if you like what you hear and you did want to give me just a little bit of support, that would be a great way for you to do it. If you're already going to Amazon to purchase something, like I said, all the books are linked up to because I am an Amazon affiliate. And so just if you didn't know anything, you don't have to buy that specific book, but just if you go to Amazon through my website, they do still give me a commission. So thanks for your support. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to check out our website, organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And you'll see the links to everything that we've talked about today in the show notes page and all the other episodes there. You can easily search for people by name. You can download our ebook on organic gardening basics and subscribe to our newsletter for updates and just different things that are going on. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow.